guide and our redeemer. Amen. As you know, sometimes churches struggle with finances. I don't know if you're aware of that, but sometimes that happens. So I've been thinking lately how there's actually a very long-standing tradition that I think we should maybe like return to, which would be great, which is to actually like charge for admission into the church. And this, just hear me out. All of you are laughing like, because I was thinking to myself, you know, in the world, we all pay for privilege, right? Every time I drive that 91 freeway headed out to Riverside, I'm like, I don't have one of those little transponders. I'm a lowly person, and those people that have it, they hop on and they're just like zipping by in their rich little cars, right? And then, you know, we were just flying the other day, and I'm like, if we would pay a little bit of extra, what do you get? You get first class. Who here has ever, who's flown first class? Anyone flown? I have flown it once. It was great. It was on I think the lady just looked at us and was like, I have pity on you, because we were super young and super poor. And they're like, try first class. Let me tell you, I sat in first class and they're coming by and they're like, would you like a drink before we take off? And I'm like, yes, I would like a drink before we take off, because I am important and I am in the front row and this is wonderful. And they came back, and after we took off, they're like, well, now that we've taken off, would you like another drink? I'm like, yes, I would. Are people in first class just always drunk? I'm curious about that. So I was thinking about, like, how could we, because let's face it, where are the most valuable seats in a church? Because if you come early enough, right? I know some of you come real super early, like, I'm going to be in the back. Well, the elite. This isn't even first class. This is like the elite. And it's tough, because if you come a little late, I'm sorry, you're a little further. And then like all the really super late people, I'm really sorry. But I personally, when I go to churches, you know where I like to sit? Front row. You know what I like to do? I like to let the pastor know that I'm there. I'm like, hi, I'm a pastor. And then I sit in the front row, because he's the whole time like, am I going to say anything bad? I think that if you want the back row, I think you need to pay for it a little bit. Yeah, I also thought maybe we could do it in an organizational manner. Like, let's get the top givers of the church. You guys get the first pick. How's that? It's weird when we talk about favoritism or privilege. In the world, we're very much used to it. If I go to a very expensive restaurant, I'm going to expect that the food is going to be good, and I'm going to expect that the service is going to be good. I will never forget the first time I went to La Villa en Rose. Have you ever heard that one? Yeah, La Villa en Rose. Now, this is great. So we sat down, and the first thing they do is they give you little rolls, right? And of course, they're flaky rolls. They're so delicious. And so we start eating them, and all of a sudden, I've got some crumbs now on the table. A dude comes by with a crumb scraper. I don't know what you call those things, a crumb scraper. And what are the, it's called a crummer? See the things you learn at church. This is why this is important. And he would come by, and he decrumbed our table, and I'm like, my goodness. And I'm like, well, this is great. And I'm one of those people, it's weird, I'm sorry, I really like to check out fancy bathrooms, especially in restaurants. So I excused myself, went to the bathroom, came back. It was a fancy bathroom. I was expecting someone to hand me my towel, though. I was a little disappointed in that, but that's okay. I came back to my seat. My napkin was refolded on my thing. I was like, oh my goodness. And we were very thankful that someone had given us a gift card there, because we couldn't afford it at all. It was terrible. We have these expectations in the world, but we don't have them in the church, or we're not supposed to have them in the church. We have been so conditioned, especially here in America, and probably even more so Orange County, the idea that money, prestige, power gets you something extra in this world. But that's not how the church is supposed to run, right? Ever. The church is not supposed to be one that looks at people and determines their worth by examining their face. That's the word that's going to be used here about favoritism, examining the face. I look out at all of you and I wonder, can I know your life story just by the color of your skin, the clothes that you're wearing, the car that you drive, the school that you went to, the business that you own, the people that you vote for, the friend group you hang around? Can I do it? The answer is probably yes. But should the church get involved in that? The answer is a heartfelt no. James is going to walk us through, we're just going to do the first half of chapter 2. And on my heading, it says, favoritism forbidden. And I think it's a wonderful title, and he's going to try to make sure that he gives a sin, favoritism, and then he's going to give us three reasons why, based on other portions of Scripture. So the topic is introduced, verses 1 to 4. 5 to 7 is number 1. 8 to 11 is number 2. And then 12 and 13 are number 3. So let's see what this says. And the nice part about something like this is I don't have to prove it to you. I don't have to say this is right or wrong. I just have to say this is what the Bible says. My job today is going to be mainly trying to help us apply it properly. James chapter 2. My brothers, which is great, he's not coming at you with guns ablazing. He's not coming after you with anger in his heart. He's not saying you are a bunch of losers who are not practicing your faith properly. He says, my brothers. And I think there's a reason why he says my brothers. And that's because I believe James had favoritism in his heart for a very long time. For a very long time, he judged his half-brother throughout his half-brother's whole life, probably even to the point of his death. And he probably even at his death was like, man, if Jesus just wasn't so crazy, he probably wouldn't have died. And then something changed. He had judged Jesus. He determined that he was crazy. But now all of a sudden he switches. And this is why I think this is important to James. He says, don't show favoritism. And then he gives an example. Suppose a man comes into your meeting wearing a gold ring and clothes, and a poor man in shabby clothes also comes in. I'm really upset. NIV, I didn't like the way they... Do you have a different word for meeting? Does anyone else in their version? Suppose a man comes into... Do you all have your meeting? Assembly? Anything else? It's a terrible, terrible translation. 56 times the word is used in a very specific way, and 55 times it's always translated the same way. The 56th time is here. The word is very simple, synagogue. This isn't a meeting like, hey, we're just hanging out, having fun. This is church. So suppose a man walks in, and he is wearing some fine jewelry. He's wearing stuff that is clearly not from Target. I'm not mocking Target. I shop there all the time. But, you know, other people are like, you need to go to Nordstrom. I'm like, I don't even know how to get into Nordstrom. I don't think they're going to let me in. I'm the pretty woman. They'll be like, no. You get out of here, mister. I see them pull up, and they're driving... fancy car. A Lexi still? No? What? A Tesla. There we go. Let's do a Tesla. And he comes pulling in, and he hops out, and he's dressed up really nicely. And you're like, wow, he's not going to fit very well at Searchlight. We're not dressed up that well. And then his wife comes out, and she's got her hair is perfectly manicured. She's got the makeup is great. And then they got these two kids in tow, and these kids, they are so well-behaved. They are walking so nicely with mom and dad, right? And they're coming in, and then along with that, in comes another person, and they're driving a Toyota. I don't know if that's a bad car or not. I'm just throwing stuff out. People are like, wait, I drive a Toyota. And they're not really dressed that well. In fact, they might even smell a little bit. Maybe they're struggling in life. Maybe they don't have a lot of money. Maybe the woman is dressed in clearly a handmade outfit that she sewed herself. The kids are looking kind of ragged. Maybe they haven't had a bath in about a week. And they're like wild and crazy, and they're like disrupting everybody, right? So they come into the church. So what do we do with these people, right? With the fancy people, I might go, oh, these could be some big givers in the church. I don't know if you know this. This is what pastors think about all the time. Money for their church. We don't. Sorry, some do. I don't. I'll tell you a story about that later. And he might be going, wow, and this woman, maybe, I mean, she seems very well-coiffed, well-respected. Maybe she could take over some women's ministry, and the kids, they, you know, are really popular, and maybe one of them looks like he's the captain of the football team, and it's like, wow, if we could pull him into the youth group, maybe more people would show up, and this would be great. And so what do? I go up to the person that looks a little bit more well-coiffed, a little bit better, a little bit more polished, and I welcome them with open arms and say, glad you are here. Suppose a man comes in into your synagogue, into your church, wearing a gold ring and fine clothes, and a poor man in shabby clothes. If you show special attention, that's that favoritism, it really is true. Judging a book by its cover is a really fantastic translation of it. If you look at someone and can prejudge them, and if we prejudge, that's put those words together, that's a prejudice, right? That's where we're getting these words from. If you prejudge them and you show special attention and we say to them, here is a fine seat for you wonderful people. It's in the back row. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. You're going to have to move. You're not dressed very well. And you're wearing Angels, so that's good. So if you're wearing Dodgers, that'd be a totally different story. I'm just kidding. The Dodger fans are going to riot. I'm sorry. This fine gentleman and his family need a place to sit. You guys go sit in the front row, okay, please? And then the shabby guy comes walking in, and I'm like, oh, I don't really even want to go talk to him, right? And maybe he looks a little weird. Maybe he sounds a little weird. Maybe he's got a funky-looking haircut. And we're like, I don't know. What do I do? I would be shocked if I even went up and introduced myself. If I did, I'd be like, well, you know, just find a seat anywhere. Well, where's this? Well, the bathroom's there, that there. Sorry, I have to go talk to some other people who are more important than you. It is very easy in the church to slip into this. I'll show you how I did it, where I completely and utterly failed. I was on my vicarage, and my vicarage supervisor had a very specific viewpoint on giving and the giving records of the church. He said, Mark, how can you help people out in their spiritual faith unless you check out how much money they're given? And so if there's people that are clearly have means and they're not giving, there's spiritual deficit that's happening, and so you need to go and talk with them. And I'm a vicar. I have no idea what the right answer to any of this stuff is. I'm learning stuff. And so he said, so I'm going to show you the top five givers at our church. I'm not lying. This is exactly what I looked at the first name on the list, and I was shocked. I was like, I don't really know this couple. I don't know their family very well. They're very humble. They're not outgoing. They're not outlandish. I would have never guessed in a trillion years that this was the top giver in the church. Guess what I did that Sunday? I went up and introduced myself. Well, wait. Why did I go introduce myself? Because they were the top giver of the church. Is that a sin? Yeah, according to James. I looked at them and I said, they're the top giver of the church. I give them special preference. You know what would have been better? Is if I like actually already knew them and I went and talked to them without knowing what they gave. Wouldn't that have been a better thing? What if I found like the lowest, the worst givers of the church? How would I maybe treat them? Would I look down on them, maybe with some disdain? And he says, if you are judging people by their, especially their wealth or social standing, you are playing favorites. And I think that that is something that we need to be extremely careful about. And so this is why, just so you know, I think I've mentioned this before, I don't look at giving records. I don't care. Because that's between you and God. I know some people, right? If Jesus helped us out with this, right? Someone came into a treasury and he got bags of money. Would you like to have a bag of money? I'm still waiting for, like, I'll just go and get a bag and stuff it with $1 bills or something like that. I got a bag of money. And they're coming to the temple treasury and they're depositing all this money. And then in comes a woman who is a widow, which means her husband has passed away. We don't know where her kids are at, probably off making their own life. She has to live now on the support of the church, and she walks in and drops in two small copper coins. And Jesus is like, let's have an object lesson here, gentlemen, disciples, who gave more? Who was the bigger giver? Was it about the amount? Or was it about the sacrifice in the heart? I think that we need to be very careful that we don't try to, especially in church life, say how important we are. I'm thankful here, no one actually does that. If you do ever come here and say, I am one of the top givers of the church, and maybe you are, by the way, I won't know. And you're like, and because of that, I would really like some of the music to change. Could that be possible? Or, you know what, I don't really like some of the decor. Can we change this? Or, you know, we're getting ready to maybe redo the carpet in the church, which is always a fun thing to do. Redoing the carpet in the church brings out the angry side of everybody, right? And of course, the top givers are like, well, wait a second, because I'm so important and because I give so much, I deserve preferential treatment. The world does it. With DUIs in Napa, just show a card. People do it when they're around other people they don't know. I read this very interesting story of a pastor. He was going to be coming in as a guest lecturer to a group of other pastors. He was a New Testament scholar, and he wrote that they went to, you know, they were at this hotel, and there was all these important people and donors and big givers. And as he was there, he realized that the staff at the hotel was grossly understaffed. And so he just started jumping in and like helping some, you know, like, here, can I get this for you? And start doing this. And he says it was really interesting. He went up to one guy and he started refilling his wine glass. And then he like tried to talk to him like, well, hey, how are you doing? And the guy kind of was like, have you ever done that? And walked away, but apparently justice is always wonderful because they finally got around in a big circle, and the guy that was hosting the party said, we'd like to welcome our New Testament scholar, I don't remember his name, and he had him stand up, and he did, and guess what the guy did after that? He ran over to him, said, hello, how are you? He said, he had a wonderful conversation with me, all because he knew how important I was. He says, I didn't change clothes. I didn't change my style. I didn't change my words. It was just my status in this gentleman's eyes. I think he also regretted looking a little bit like the staff help. This is one of the reasons why I will not wear a red shirt to Target. Sometimes, though, I do check out their break rooms, so it's kind of fun. So, we do it in other ways, too. I watched this heart-wrenching video of, they wanted to test it out. This is in France. And it shows a guy and he's kind of homeless looking. He's kind of got the scruffy beard look, and his hair's kind of messed up, and he's wearing a beanie. Yeah, when you wear a beanie, you look homeless. I'm sorry. So he's out in this public plaza. And as he's out in this public plaza, he just starts coughing, and he starts stumbling a little bit. And then he kind of tumbles to the ground, and he's running. And people, this is no joke, or this is what they're doing. They're walking by, and they're like, keep on walking, right? And he then starts saying in these muffled tones, help me, help me, help me, the entire time. Guess how many people came and helped him? No one. Why? Because he was homeless looking. Because he was prejudged. That's not good. The same guy went, got a shave, put on a three-piece suit, had a little briefcase with him, and he does the same thing, same plaza. And he's walking through, and he starts coughing, and he's like, and then he kind of drops to a knee, and he's like, and he's coughing, he's like, help me. And guess what happens? 20 people came around him. Are you okay, sir? Like, they surrounded him like a mob, like, let me help you. Why help one and not the other? Prejudge. I told you this was going to be a sermon filled with tons of examples. I did it one time on my vicarage congregation. I learned a little bit about favoritism, so we were going to test this theory out because I think this was my text, and I was going to preach on the Sunday night service. And the Sunday night service was a youth service, had a youth band, and so I was preaching at the service, and I had just a couple weeks earlier called on a brand new visitor. So someone had came and visited this family, mom and dad and two young boys, and they came and visited. And so pastor was like, well, you got to go visit them in their church, in their home. And I'm like, that's really weird and awkward. Like, that's strange to me. Like, what if I just like showed up at your house like, hi, I'm the pastor, you came to church on Sunday? You'd be like, oh, psycho, fantastic, shut the door, right? But I had to do this because I was just learning. So I went and called on him, and I'm talking to the family, and it was so funny because the guy, the older kid, his name's Ryan, was walking in, and he looked at me, and I'm like, oh, hi, I'm Vicar Manning, I'm over at Christ Greenfield. And he goes, I know who you are. And he says, I'm a Methodist. I was born a Methodist. I'm living as a Methodist. I will die as a Methodist. I will never attend your Lutheran church. Huh, this is the kid. This is the high school student. Yeah, yeah, yeah. High school student. I'm like, hello to you too. We won him over, partially because I said, hey, can you help me out with a sermon that I'm preaching? He goes, sure, what is it? I said, I want to find out if there's favoritism. And no one in the church knows you. You literally just showed up, so no one knows you. So can I have you kind of dress poorly and, you know, put on a beanie? Because that's it. If you put on a beanie, you look homeless. Just saying. And I told him, don't shower for a couple of days. And it was so interesting because I had him sit near the church property so that when people came, he was there. You couldn't miss the guy. And he didn't do anything like, you know, yell or scream or freak out or, you know, look like he was shooting up drugs or anything. He was just there and kindly, and literally, I was watching because he was right outside my church office so I could spy on it. Literally, no one came and spoke to him, not one person, not one person. So when the sermon came, it was a great time for me. I felt really powerful because I was like, hey, did any of you guys see that guy that was sitting out there? And most were like, yeah, I saw him. Like, and I said, did anyone go and talk to him? And everyone just did the, you know, look down, don't make eye contact. I said, did anyone talk? And then everyone's like, no one talked to him. And I said, well, actually, I'd like to introduce you to him. And I had him come forward. He walked down the center aisle. His name's Ryan Golden, and he's brand new here. And I was just curious where we all at. And I told him, I said, look, I'm not angry at you, because guess what I would have done? I would have walked right by him. I would have ignored him, because I don't know if I would have liked him. Would I have liked him in the church? Did I prejudge him? Did I examine him and determine of his worth? Do you want to know a real funny story about Ryan Golden? He's going to be a pastor. He's going to be ordained in January. I'm going to die a Methodist. I'm like, really? Is that so? I had to give a recommendation, a verbal recommendation to our district president because he was going through this stuff. And so I'm going to try and get out there to be there, because if I do, I'm hoping I get to tell the story. Like, do you remember, Ryan? I'm going to die a Methodist. Oh. Would you share a dorm room with someone who had the opposite political beliefs as you? You know they've actually done the studies on this. How about over the past couple years at Thanksgiving? Did you not invite certain people because they are crazy? I love it because you're like, which way are you talking about? I'm like, I'm talking about both ways. Some of you are like, those crazy people on the right, they're nutty. And some of you are like, those crazy people on the left, they're strange, yeah. Do you prejudge them? Is their value, as someone who votes for an opposite political party, is their value less in your eyes? Should they be? Now again, I don't blame the world. I mean, as we've talked about, the world does this. The world is very big on, I will look at you, I will judge you, and I will try to figure out. We do that whenever we enter into a room that we don't know, right? What do with a room that we don't know? We quickly scan, and I'll quickly determine who, I don't know, maybe looks a little bit like me, maybe is my same age. Maybe they're not wearing a beanie because they look homeless. And I go, yeah, I think I'll go and talk to them. How many of you, when you enter a room, go and talk to the strangest person in the room? No one, do you? Doesn't happen that often. It's strange how we judge people. When we dropped Jacob off at seminary, we went to a church. It was called Reliant, and it was really funny because that evening we were supposed to have a party, and we were inviting a lot of our youth back that were youth. When Heather and I were back at the seminary 27 years ago, it still hurts my head thinking about it. Even the youth are coming up, and they're like, you're not as old as we thought. Like, well, you know, when you're just out of college, high school students are really young, aren't they? Right? Like, it's weird. Now, like, one of them came up to me, and she was like, you just had your 50th. I go, yep. She goes, I just had my 42nd birthday. I'm like, what? No. No, you can't be 8 years younger than me. And I'm like doing the math, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess you can be. That would be just about the right thing. So we're throwing this party, and the people that Jacob is staying with, a very friendly lady named Sarah, and she just starts randomly going up to people and inviting them to the party. It's hilarious. So I'm standing in there, and there's this couple, and she's like, oh, yeah, Dominic and Christina, they're going to be coming to the party tonight. I'm like, oh, that's fantastic. And so I start talking to Dominic and Christina because they seem like, you know, good Christian Lutheran people there at, the, at you know, this church. And I'm like, this is wonderful. And, you know, I'm a Lutheran pastor, so, you know, I kind of know a little bit. And it was really weird because the lady, Christina, she looked at me and she said, so where is your son going? And I said, he's going to Concordia Seminary St. Louis. She goes, what is that? What is that? I said, oh, it's the seminary. It's where you learn to become a pastor. Oh, and what for? What church body? And I go, Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. I said, that's it. Reliant is a Lutheran church. I said, I looked at her and said, how long have you been coming here? And she said, oh, this is our first Sunday. We're brand new visitors to the whole place. I wouldn't have judged. They sure look like long-standing members of the church. You've got to be careful. Chuck Smith, Calvary Chapel. Do you remember the hippie days? I don't remember the hippie days. I was born during the hippie days. But this was a fantastic story. Chuck Smith started to have guitars in church, which was like crazy. Because then you're going to have like a bunch of kumbaya, you're going to have lighters, and people are going to be smoking stuff. And they're going to come in, and they're not showered, and they're wearing beanies because those hippies are crazy. And it was funny because they were having a meeting, and Chuck Smith was getting a bunch of heat from the church body because they were saying, look, we just installed brand new carpet. And there are people that are coming in, they are not wearing shoes. We cannot let them come in here with their dirty feet and mess up our brand new carpet. You know what Chuck Smith did? Now, that would have been great. He should have just kicked his shoes off and started wiping. Like, yeah, I'm just going to put my stuff in this too. But you know what he did? He went over to the edge of the carpet, and he started grabbing it, and he started yanking it out. He's like, well, if you're worried about the carpet and the carpet is preventing hippies from walking into my church, the carpet goes. Because what they were saying is, the hippies got to go. Because people were judging. Do you see how ingrained it is? And I know that it's in the world, but it's in our hearts here in church. And we've got to be careful of it. So, back to verse 3. If you show special attention to the man wearing fine clothes and say, here's a good seat for you in the back row, congratulations. But you say to the poor man, you stand there in the front row or sit on the floor by my feet. Have you not discriminated among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? How much do you judge people by the way they look, dress, talk, sound, smell? Do you do it in church? It's not allowed in church. And then he goes on with this wonderful thing of helping us understand three major points. One of them has kind of a sub-point. So the first point, he says, listen, my dear brothers. Again, he's not, and I'm saying this to you too. How can I sit here and hammer you for all your evilness? Well, it's real simple. Because I got the same issues. And I've got to always say, I can't just on Sunday morning go and talk to the people I know. I've got to talk to the people I don't know, even the weird-looking ones. Some of you are here. If you don't know it's you, then that's good. Then we've treated you well. I'm just kidding. Listen, my dear brothers, has not God chosen those who are poor in the eyes of the world to be rich in faith and to inherit the kingdom he promised those who love him? But you have insulted the poor. Is it not the rich who are exploiting you and dragging you into court? Are they not the ones who are slandering the noble name of him to whom you belong? What he's essentially saying is, as a general rule of thumb, do poor people often have higher generous spirits? As a general rule of thumb, not talking to everybody, have you all met poor people who are really stingy, rotten people? Well, I've met a lot of them. but many of them are very giving, are very kind. Not all of the homeless, but some of the homeless that I've dealt with are some people that would give you the shirt off their back, even though that would be their last shirt. Because there's this generous spirit. And as a general rule of thumb, are the uber wealthy among us. Let's talk about the elites, the politicians. Are they the ones that are actually living out their faith in proper ways? Or are they suing people, constantly going to court, trying to take advantage of people who are underneath them, maybe are slumlords? Again, not everyone, right? Have I met some really incredibly generous, kind, wealthy people? Absolutely. But in a general rule of thumb, are most politicians honest? They're not. We keep reelecting them. I don't understand this. It always drives me nuts. And if a politician came into the room, where do we seat them? Do we seat them up here up front because it's a punishment? Or maybe he thinks that being up front is where he should go because that's the most important part. Or maybe we seat him in the back. How many of you would not allow him even to come in? Is that... Oh, yeah, so if he sat over here, you would just sit over there. How many of you would sit next to him and maybe talk to him? Have you prejudged him or her? Right? Oh, it's in you. Here, let me tell you this. I didn't make up this saying. I wrote it down. The ground is even at the foot of the cross. The ground is even at the foot of the cross. When you come into church, it does not matter your background. It doesn't matter where you came from. God says that I often choose the poor and the downtrodden to make my point. I often choose those who are humble with lowly means to confound the ways of the wise. When you come into the church, it doesn't matter. You could even be wearing a beanie, and you're welcome here in the church. I'm really worried. I know next week everyone's going to show up with beanies. You're like, we're going to show you. Yeah, just to make you angry. Because if God played favorites, would you be one of them? Maybe me. I chose to become a pastor, so maybe I get special treatment. Some of you have been Christian longer than me. You haven't committed the sins I've committed, though. Now, you may not know them, but God does. So I think that if he was going to look down and look at a favorite, I don't think you'd choose me. I know all of your guys' story, too. He would choose none of you. You guys are all terrible. But the ground is even at the foot of the cross. When Jesus looks at you, he doesn't look at your outside. He doesn't look at the color of your skin. He doesn't look at the education you have. He doesn't look to see if you're wearing the latest trends. He doesn't see what kind of car you're driving. He doesn't see what kind of house you live in. He doesn't see if you're wearing the latest and greatest Kylie Jenner makeup. It does not matter what you have. He looks at you because he loves you with all of his heart. And he said that you were worth dying for. Think about that for just a moment. You are worth dying for. Because God does not play favorites. So that's one reason that, you know, in life sometimes the rich can be scoundrels and the poor can be better. So why should we play favorites? And also God himself looks at us and doesn't do that. Also, if you really keep the royal law in Scripture, love your neighbor as yourself, you're doing right. But if you show favoritism, you sin and are convicted by the law as lawbreakers. So is it a sin to show favoritism? Yes, it can't be any clearer. If you show favoritism, you are sinning. And it's not just in church, but it's also in the world. So if you show favoritism, you are sinning and you are not loving your neighbor as yourself. And you might say to yourself, it's really not that big of a deal, right? But yeah, I threaten, and one of these days I think I would love to write the book, The 7 Acceptable Sins of the Church, right? One of the acceptable sins of the church is favoritism. Oh, wait, oh, can't upset them. No, you're speaking out against that people. No, they're some of your biggest givers. Don't do that. I've actually been ordered to watch what I say to certain people because they were the biggest givers in the church. Well, favoritism is accepted. If you are a bigger giver, you have a bigger voice. Except at Searchlight, congratulations. I don't care what you think. If we think that this isn't that big of a deal, listen to what James says. For whoever keeps the whole law and yet stumbles at just one point is guilty of breaking it all. For he who said, do not commit adultery, also said, do not murder. If you do not commit adultery and do not commit murder, you have become a lawbreaker. So, essentially it's, look, you can be like perfect in everything and you show favoritism, you're a sinner. Congratulations. Now, I am aware, I don't like talking about this because people are like, ooh, there are degrees of sin. Yes, there are degrees of sin. Some sins are more heinous than others, right? Like, if you literally go kill someone, that's bad, right? You would say that was bad? You have anger in your heart. Jesus says that's the equivalent also of murder. But I'd rather you just be angry at someone and not actually go out and physically kill them. You're like, well, I'm going to get convicted of this anyway, so I might as well go and kill the person. No, 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 no. So there are degrees, but we often, again, look at favoritism. We go, oh, it's not that big of a deal. Well, that is a big deal. If you are a respecter of persons, especially societal, and especially based on wealth, that's wrong, period. He says it is not acceptable. So you don't do it because God doesn't show favoritism to us, and we shouldn't just assume that because someone's poor, they're not worth our time because rich are often dragging us into court. And also, we love our neighbors as ourselves, right? You've got to love your neighbors, you love yourself. If you're choking in France, you shouldn't have to worry about if you're wearing the right clothes in order to get help. And then, speak and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom. So there's going to come a day. that we need to make sure that we understand how God has treated us. He says, because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful, right? Careful. This is one of the reasons why I don't really like saying the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. So do you know what you're praying at that point? Lord, however good I am at forgiving other people, can you please treat me the same? I would rather not have him do that. So it's like, anytime we say the Lord's Prayer, I usually mumble at that point. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver, and then I keep going. I joke, but if you are someone who shows favoritism, what you're asking is, God, please do it with me as well. Lord, judge me on my externals. Judge me on how I dress. Judge me if I have shoes on in church. Judge me if I give the right amount of money. Judge me if I take a shower beforehand. Judge me, Lord, on everything that doesn't matter. And I think none of us here want that, do we? Instead, we are so grateful. When God looks through everything, all your sin, all your nastiness, all your horridness, and says, you were worth dying for, and I love you, and I always want to be with you. It's real simple. Stop judging. We may be experts in the externals, but we shouldn't be doing it at church, because God hasn't done that with you. So maybe today is a wonderful day that you say, wow, how much am I colored by certain things? And we all have our own vices. Maybe it's you judge people by the cleanliness of the interior of their car. Or maybe you judge them by the cleanliness of their clothes that they're wearing. Or whether they're wrinkled. Or whether they're crumpled. Or whether they have a tie or not. God didn't do that with us. We don't do that with others. And praise God for that. Because the end of verse 13, mercy triumphs over judgment. Because God has judged you, and he has found you lacking. And he says, but I'm going to be merciful and kind and gracious to you. Stop playing favorites. Let's pray.